Lowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Thursday morning out there, western, northwestern Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Got all kinds of different topics to get into today. The USFL is back. Fox Sports owns it all. Coming to your TV sets next spring after a 40-year hiatus. The USFL is back. Same team name, same team logos. One different owner, I can promise you that. But the USFL is back. Does that excite you whatsoever? And what do they have to do to make it a viable, functioning league? We've seen this tried a few times, but with Fox involved, one of the main partners of the NFL, how excited are you about it? Paul Feinbaum, I put what else you got on the rundown. I got something else. Paul Feinbaum eviscerated the University of Texas football program on Get Up. And while I think it's funny, I don't know if it needed to go quite to that level, especially with one comment he made comparing the Longhorns to another in-state school that I don't know if that other one's that much better than what Texas has been. But we can get into that. Right after we got off the show yesterday, bombshell in college basketball with Coach Mike Krzyzewski retiring at the end of this coming season. They've already tabbed John Shire to take over that program. What's it going to be like there without K? Will Duke stay Duke? Will it not be quite the draw that it has been? NBA playoffs. Boy, that 2018 draft is looking pretty good, isn't it? Trey and Luka. Just dominating. The Hawks beat the Knicks 4-1. They move on to play Philly. Luka with 42 last night has Dallas on the brink of eliminating L.A. Is that the best draft day trade ever? I can think of one other that would rival for sure. Also, tonight, is this the end? Are we seeing the end of LeBron James? Not that he's going to retire. But is this really it? I mean, I think both of us thought in Game 5, 2-2 down in Phoenix, no Anthony Davis, we might see this Herculean effort from LeBron James, and it just didn't happen. Is he too old to do it? Is he now an ancillary piece? A very, very good ancillary piece, but a piece on a championship team, not the focus. Are those days over? And also, with the matchups that are decided in the East and what might happen in the West, is the East actually more fun? Is it better than what the West is? Oklahoma came up short yesterday in the national title match in golf. We'll talk about that. Also, Women's College World Series. First pitch 2 hours from right this second at Hall of Fame Stadium in Oklahoma City. So that's kind of what we've got on our mind. Feel free to chime in along with those things or whatever else you might want to talk about it. 225-9698. That's the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else is on your mind. We've got if you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with us. If you're driving through and you lose us over the air, log on to kadsam.com. Hit the listen live tab, play button, boom, you're live streaming us that way. Or you can download the Paragon Communications app. The app has all the radio stations. It's got the Penny News, brand new print edition, the Penny News, hitting newsstands right now. Go pick up a free copy of the Penny News. Check out the deals in this week's edition. We got Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, when those things are rolling with high school sports. We've also got the Skinny on Sports podcast that you can find also on the website at kadsam.com or iTunes or the Skinny on Sports Facebook page. Hello, Jared.
How are you?
Wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm good. I know it's going to be warm today. You know why?
Why is that?
Because it's freezing in here.
Well, you know.
Man.
It's not going to be that warm. Just 80-something. 80. I tell you what.
It's warm compared to what we've had.
You look at the old forecast for the next week or so.
We heating up?
It looks like perfection. Every day is somewhere in the 80s.
High 70s and 80s?
Man,
low 80s?
Low 80s to almost upper 80s.
I'll take it.
A couple of the days. Not much rain in the forecast. Sun in the forecast.
I don't know
if you've fertilized your yard. I have three different times now.
Oh, I can tell. I've done it once. Just once. And I can tell.
And so.
And I have it on my schedule to do it about every other month this summer. I don't think I need to. At least for a little bit. Because, I mean, once I mowed, I mean, I could tell like 4 or 5 days later I needed to mow again.
Yeah.
And it helps that we get just all this rain.
Yeah, the rain's
great.
That
definitely helps.
The rain's great, and hopefully it doesn't stop. But I think after you get this much rain, it's basically anybody that can hear us has gotten over the last week and a half or two.
Yeah.
Some of this heat will really help things pop.
Yeah.
Really get growing. Really get going. So
yeah.
That's going to be
I'm just
going to be nice.
I'm just itching for summer, man.
Yeah, no, and then here's the problem, though. In 3 weeks, we'll be in here going, good gosh, what happened to the rain in the 70s? Let's cool it down a little bit here.
I will not.
You won't.
I will not complain about the heat. I will not, because we might have another winter like we just had. That was incredibly cold. Coldest I've ever seen in my life. See what I'm saying? I'm not going to mess with fate here. I will never complain about the heat. You can try to hold me to that? Did you get some more breaking news?
No. Breaking news. My family can't find things.
Did you lose a glove?
Bat. Close.
A bat. Well, you could borrow a bat.
No, listen. It's a borrowed bat.
It's already a borrowed bat.
It's in the car.
Okay.
It's in the other car. Anyhow, I don't know what happened. I got distracted.
You got flustered there.
Well, I mean, you know.
You looked at me like you lost something.
For just a sec. I mean, you know.
Well, you didn't lose it.
Is that something that needs to... We all know where I'm at, don't we?
Only time I get text messages from my significant other.
That's when you say something wrong.
Yeah, because I know she's listening. She wants to correct me. She's good about doing, which is why we work.
How was the food last night?
Oh, it was fantastic.
What did you have?
10-ounce ribeye.
Nice.
So big, you know.
Sides?
They had this thing called street corn.
Elote.
Thank you. Yeah. And
did it have mayonnaise on it?
Nah, I don't think so.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure. It was real sweet.
A little bit of, what's that cheese called? Queso fresco? Was there some of that on there?
It's just really fancy. It's a fancy place, man.
Was it on the cob?
I tried it. Yeah. I try to keep it classy, you know, but, I mean, that place is just...
What else? What was the other
great
side?
Great place to go.
I saw the specials.
I had... you get two sides. I had a salad to start, and then... we had a cheese board to start.
The elote.
We had the cheese board with all different types of cheeses.
What did everybody else have?
Oh, let me go down the list. Some kind of pasta for one person. My wife had the po' boy, the shrimp po' boy sandwich.
Ah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Massive. Yeah, she liked it. And other couple were with. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law split a steak. Mother-in-law had chicken. It's all fancy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was real nice. We sat out in that area. You said not to sit in if it rained.
Well, it's not raining, so
it was
perfect.
Beautiful. And, you know, last night was beautiful, wasn't it? No wind. And we're up there on that hill, and I'm thinking we're just going to blow all the way to Custer City. No, it was just completely
not right now. You're
calm
not.
And still, and the sunset was beautiful. It was a nice night.
For like the next 4 days.
That's awesome.
It's going to be, you know how, see, in Oklahoma, western Oklahoma, northwestern Oklahoma, everybody kind of gets it. There's what, 10, 15 days in a row, 15 days in a year? Where it's just perfect.
This might be one of them.
And you think to yourself, thank goodness it's not like this all the time because more people would live here.
Ah, true. True. Because
we're going to have like four of those in a row.
I get reminded how beautiful this part of the state is when I go to a place like that. up on that hill.
You can see all the terrain.
Seeing the terrain, and the sunset was fantastic, and it was just, it was real nice. Nice evening, celebrating my mother-in-law's birthday. I mean, she looks great for 49. I wouldn't dare say how old she is on air.
I don't blame you.
No, it was nice. Nice night.
The only problem with what you were doing is you didn't get to watch the golf. Which
I was bugging you about that. I had it on my phone, like the golf stat,
right?
The www.golfstat.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And
that's how I type it in every time.
I was constantly clicking refresh, but you can't get a feel of how it's going. Is there a chance that it could turn or tie or anything like that? So that's why I was kind of. I think I didn't bug you very much, but.
It started out. Pepperdine took the lead early. Oklahoma came back right around the turn. It looked pretty good for OU, really and truly, because Brightwell had gotten back in his match and actually taken the lead after going down two early. You know, Quade was still in his, and the other two, Lorenz and McAllister, were both multiple holes up. And of course, the rebound match was a loser. You knew that,
right?
We'll get to that. But and then from that stretch, I don't know, probably number 11 is where some of those matches started to go the wrong way. And number 11 was a par 5. You didn't really see how they played the hole a lot of time. You just kind of saw, and Oklahoma was always had 15 footers for par. And then, you know, whoever was on the ground for the reporting, you know, like Bones or Noda Begay or whoever it might have been. It's like, yeah, he's, you know, whoever the OU player was, and it seemed like there's about three in a row there. They just butchered this hole.
Mm.
And from there, that kind of turned the tide. And the 13th hole was a par 3 that it felt like Pepperdine played way better than Oklahoma did. And then, you know, some of those matches flipped to kind of even. Others, Pepperdine had a lead that they grew to basically insurmountable. But, I understand maybe if you haven't been paying attention to it until now, which most people haven't. You look at it and you think, golly, OU was number one. Pepperdine was number nine. You know, how did this happen? Well, it happened because the team that was number one for Oklahoma most of the year wasn't there. And I don't mean like somebody was missing. They were there. They just weren't there.
Right.
And that, and you can't just throw it all on one guy's shoulders, but It was going to be so incredibly difficult, and we talked about this yesterday, for Quade, for McAllister, and for Brightwell to all win all three matches all three times against the quality of teams that they're playing against. It was just going to be so difficult to do, and they needed somebody to step up. Unfortunately, you know, fifth-year senior Garrett Reban, who played so well this season and so well for his career, has earned a Corn Ferry exemption because he's one of the top five players in the country. Just lost it. Hmm. And I mean lost it to the point of there was almost zero chance he was going to win. Almost zero. And sure enough, he got beat soundly by the lefty Highsmith from Pepperdine, which honestly was probably, looking back, you almost wish maybe William Mao, who beat Quade, who played great, hadn't but did yesterday. You know, one of those two guys needed to play rebound. Maybe Quade had a better chance against Highsmith. Maybe not. You don't know. But, you know, and then so when Quade loses, it's up to freshman Ben Lorenz to be the other guy, and he was close. Took it all the way to 18, hit what looked like he hit a fantastic shot out of the bunker from the fairway. It just kind of rolled past the pin a little bit further than it needed to for him to make the putt that he had to have to win that hole. You know, but he acquitted himself very, very nicely, but he was also playing a fifth-year senior. And it just wasn't they rebanned. That was just, it's baffling as to what happened to him. But it was also, once it did, it's just so hard for those guys to be able to win all three matches, all three quarters, semis, and finals, and they needed it out of somebody else and just didn't get it.
Yeah, I think we all knew going in, if Reband wasn't going to play very well, then...
Well, nobody... I mean, I don't know how anybody thought he was. I mean, that right. basically, to I mean, me, you I, had four matches to win 3 points.
Yeah, I had an outside hope of maybe, okay, he's gotten out of this funk. Because, you know, that's golf, right? Some days you go out and you're just it's just not your day. Then the very next day you play the very same course, and all of a sudden you strike the ball perfect and everything's going your way. So I had this outside hope that Reband would be that person, be that guy. Clearly... Early in the match, you could tell it wasn't.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, well, going back to what I said yesterday, you just got to win 3 points here.
Mm-hmm.
You got to win three. And you would almost put Quade Cummins in that category.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know? You had, well, but that's the problem, though. You can't. Eventually, you're going to run into somebody, no matter how good you are,
yeah.
with the three straight times. One of those nine matches for those three guys, you're going to run into somebody that just plays great.
Right.
And if you don't, you're beat. And that's what happened. Mal was great. Gosh, it seemed like he was probably 3 or 4 under through 15 holes. I mean, that's – you tip your cap and you go on, but that's where somebody else has to do it,
right.
has to help.
Yeah.
And, oh, you just didn't have anybody else. Lorenz gave it his all, and for a freshman, acquitted himself incredibly nicely. I mean, he made – golly, who did he play? He played Flegler, Clay Flegler. He made him make putt after putt after putt after putt after putt to beat him, but he did.
Right.
He made him, you know, you know, 16 after Lorenz stiffed it in there on 15 to tie the match. 16 was that par three. The wind was blowing right to left, and you couldn't hit it long because you got down there way below the green, and it was just a really, really hard shot. And so, you know, they said the whole time, well, you got to cut it back up into the wind, which for a righty, obviously a left-to-right shot, to hold it, to make it land soft. And they Lorenz did that, and he hit it about 3, maybe 2 yards too far. And it rolls down off the back, and he has almost no chance to get it up and down for par. You know, if that lands, that's how close he was. I mean, that's how well he played. But it still wasn't good enough. And, you know, it's just... It was always an uphill battle, when especially against Pepperdine, because all five of their guys had won matches in the first two rounds, had played well. You know, they were the opposite of what OU was. They could get a point from anybody in the lineup, mm-hmm. where the Sooners could only get it from three spots. And when one of those three got beat, they needed someone else to step up. Lorenz tried, couldn't do it, and it just in Reband, it was just such a man that is just a baffling thing what happened to him. You know, he came in number 5 player in the country, and he literally had no clue what he was doing. Like it was just you could see him like yesterday. He was trying anything and everything to get it around there and give him a chance to stay in holes. But that puts so much pressure on the rest of your game when you can't hit it. You know, and it was really. The other guy from the Highsmith for Pepperdine, you know, he was just blowing driver down there, right down the middle. It felt like every hole. And there was 80 yards difference because Reband couldn't hit driver because he didn't know where it was going.
Yeah.
And you give up that much on every hole, eventually, you know, it just it puts so much pressure on everything else. So it was a heck of a run.
Yeah, you know, kudos.
Heck of a run.
To OU getting that far. And
they ran into the better team.
Yeah,
I think
kudos to Pepperdine. I mean, yeah. they put together a fantastic team.
They ran through Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, which is number 1 and number 3 coming into the tournament in the semifinals and finals.
Yeah, they definitely earned it.
Yeah, you know, they were complete. They were complete. To
yeah.
me, definitely the difference between them and Oklahoma was five guys playing well. And if one, you know, if one lost, you still had that. Well, this other guy's playing well, whereas OU wasn't that. You know, as soon as Quade lost, it was like whoop,
right?
Maybe a miracle from the freshman, but maybe not. You know, but just the way it goes sometimes. But it was fun. One thing I would complain about with Golf Channel's coverage, my gosh, was there a commercial load?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it seemed like it was hard to kind of get in a rhythm of watching it because about the time you'd see two or three shots or kind of get into the hole or the match, and boom, there it was again.
Yeah.
And you come back, it was almost like the commercial that in the NFL, when they kick the extra point after a touchdown, they take the commercial, then they kick off, then they take the commercial. Yeah. You know, sometimes it felt like it was that kind of choppy, but it was really cool. The course looked really fun out there at Greyhawk in Scottsdale. Cool event.
I'd be all over the desert out there.
Yeah, that didn't look like where you wanted to be.
No,
that's
man,
for sure.
I was seeing that and thought, man, I hate that to walk out into that stuff to get your ball.
The cactus.
Ugh.
Some of those cactus jump at you. They always talk the jumping cholla. Have you heard of this?
No.
Yeah. Next.
So now cactus are attacking people.
So next January or February, I can't remember which. I think it's early February, when the Phoenix Open is played. If you just watch it a little bit, Gary McCord will talk about the jumping cholla when somebody hits it over toward the cactus. And he claims that you get close enough, it'll jump out and grab you.
I call.
That's what he says.
Bull ass on that one.
It's just some kind of, and it'll stick to you. And once it gets you, he says it's hard to get off. He'll talk about it. It does it every year.
Well, you know I'm Googling that.
Jumping
cholla.
It's like C-H-O-A-L-L-A or something like that.
That sounds like a mascot for a small college in the desert.
It ought to be.
Jumping cholla.
Maybe that's what Grand Canyon State is, or Grand Valley, or Grand Canyon.
I know Grand Canyon. That they are, I don't know. I know they're not that. I know they're an animal. Because I had a cousin that went there. Okay, yeah. It literally is a thing.
Yeah, I'm not just making this. I couldn't even make something like that up.
Sneaky jumping cholla cactus attack. There's a YouTube video on it. Oh, wow. Another reason I don't want to live in the desert.
Yeah.
You ever get a cactus on you?
No.
I have before.
I can't imagine that's fun.
Nope. I brushed against one, and there it was on my leg.
It jumped on you.
Jumping cholla. I wasn't paying attention, and it just jumped. It just didn't jump on me. I just brushed against it. I was picking out prills for about 30 minutes, or quills, or whatever they're called.
Quills. That comes from a porcupine.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that looks terrifying. I'm watching a video on this. It's not actually jumping, but it's showing it in
this. Yeah, I don't think it hops like a frog or anything.
Man. Yeah. I'd be all over the desert if I played a place like that.
The one time I played in Arizona, it was the how do you say that? Saguaro cactuses?
The traditional
looking?
Okay. Yeah.
There was just tons of golf balls just stuck in them.
Oh, boy.
Where people just lasered them right into the
saguaro. They don't even attempt. Like, nope, that's a goner.
Yeah, no. You know any part of those razor
sharp.
You
don't get your golf ball retriever and...
I don't think it goes into that. It's more for the water.
I could see it getting in the cactus. And
you probably need a chainsaw.
Oh, my goodness. This guy is pulling cactus from his finger. Ugh.
You're welcome.
I'm going to pass on that one. Thanks for the nightmare.
You're welcome. So Sooners second in the golf. Now, we've shipped our focus to another chance at Bedlam.
Yeah.
Oklahoma City coming up starting here in about an hour and a half. Something just came across the old Twitter feed. Professional sports gambler used analytics to turn a $700,000 loan into more than $300 million. I'm going to have to read more about that and see exactly what happened.
How much loan?
$700,000 loan into more than $300 million.
After paying it off?
I have no idea.
How do you convince a loan officer to loan you that much money for gambling?
I'm not sure if it was completely for gambling. I think it started out he was a really good gambler. He's kind of browsing in here. I think he started out as like an investment banker. And then got into gambling, won a bunch of money, started a kind of like a Fat Jack type deal.
Right.
And then the loan was for a soccer team.
Was he going to buy ownership into a soccer
basically,
team?
Basically, yeah. He provided a loan so that the fans could purchased the team, and when they didn't, he gained ownership, and now that has turned into $300 million anyway.
Wow.
We'll read about it. It seems interesting. Yeah, on the surface, it feels like.
I wish I had money to blow like that, you know, to take risk like that. I don't have, you know what I mean?
Yeah, on the surface, it feels like he just gambled his way to $300 million.
It's a
million,
giant but
that's
risk, but it doesn't. It just seems like he was really, really, really smart
yeah.
with his investments.
Oxford is where he went, by the way.
Well, there you go.
Oxford.
He must be from London. You mentioned soccer and Oxford. I mean, two and two together.
That's right. You got it. All right, Women's College World Series coming up here in an hour and a half from Oklahoma City. Game one will be number one Oklahoma against unseeded James Madison. Game two will be number five Oklahoma State against unseeded Georgia. Obviously, both win on the same side of the bracket. We'll get 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Bedlam round, what, five?
Three, four, five, yeah.
Bedlam round five there at Hall of Fame Stadium. You know, last week for OU starting out, you know, Gabby Plain, the pitcher from Washington, a lot of people thought that was a bad matchup for the Sooners. Their pitching hasn't been necessarily as dominant as what you would want to see. The hitting has really kind of carried the load for the Sooners. I think they've scored at least 4 runs in every single game so far this season. 50-2, one loss in the Big 12 Conference. Fifth straight appearance, 14th overall. The Patty Gasso squads have won 4 national titles, runner-up twice. And then you got little James Madison, who's never been there, unseeded, 39-2, though, in the Colonial, 17-1. And Odyssey Alexander is their pitcher, redshirt senior. Now, this is another one of those, does good pitching beat good hitting? We'll find out. So far, that hasn't been the case.
No.
Now, the one thing, if you're an OU fan, I think a lot of people are maybe even more confident going into this week than they were last week because of the way that their pitchers were able to pitch.
Could they be peaking at the right time?
That's right, yeah. I mean, and listen, the truth of it is, I mean, with those stats I just gave, if Oklahoma can give up less than 4 runs, history of the season says they win.
Yeah.
So how hard is it to not give up 4 runs? Well, It's kind of funny to read what the stats really are. Because is it Sale? Shannon Sale?
I believe so.
17-0 in the Big 12, led the conference with a 1.31 ERA in 85 2/3 inning pitched. May was 13-1, 1.75. So, I mean, you know, it's
right.
Those
are stats, but when the eye test, though, when you see
that's
it
right.
happen, you kind of
I don't
see
disagree
flaws.
That they have pitching problems.
Sure.
And it's not necessarily that they just give up hit after hit. I think, but what they do is a couple too many walks. There's been an error or two
right.
here and there that have led to some big innings for some other teams. I'm just super interested to see what happens because I don't know if it's one of those where, you know, pessimistic because you hadn't kind of seen something before, you know? I don't know. But I really think this is we're going to come in to it talking about who can win, who can't, you know. I think there's a chance we leave coming next Tuesday or next Wednesday morning when we come in here, the conversation shifts to is this one of the best teams of all time?
It's a conversation that will be had if they can complete this World Series with a title, and then how they complete it will also factor in. If they go in and just dominate this thing, you know, if they get to the final, say, I don't know, versus UCLA or even Oklahoma State, and they make it look easy, then sure, that conversation will be had. They'll rank them up there with some of the all-time greats, including those all-time great UCLA teams and Arizona teams that we remember from way back. But Oklahoma's kind of been on that course all season long of could this be the greatest, and then that talk kind of quieted down after the Georgia loss, and they looked human, but they've looked dominant ever since. And I think the most impressive thing, like you said, and maybe because it's just recently happened, was, I mean, I'm with you being, you know, following this sport and following Oklahoma particularly, seeing the Washington matchup made me nervous. And they just took care of business, and they looked dominant, especially that closeout game on Saturday. They looked dominant doing it. So, again, that conversation will be had if they make this thing silly. I mean, if they, I mean, you'd expect them to take care of James Madison. You expect it. And it, but then if they go on and get, you know, Oklahoma State or Georgia, and they take care of them with ease, and I think the contenders are obviously UCLA, and I think Alabama is a team I'd be really nervous about too. But if they play in one of those teams and look just heads and shoulders better than the other team, they will be considered one of the best ever.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt, but they got to do it. Oklahoma State and Georgia, Kenny Gajewski has done a fantastic job in his five seasons at OSU. Second straight appearance, 12th overall for the Cowgirls. They get Georgia, and it's so interesting. You look at that 50-2 from OU on the season. No matter if they win the game, no matter what happens in the other one, they're going to play one of the two teams that beat them with OSU and Georgia. Yeah. It's pretty wild how that worked out. Oklahoma State, it took them three games to dispatch of Texas. It's also probably hard to beat a team about six times in one year because OSU had dominated the Longhorns going into that super regional. But they're in the closeout game. Eberle, the pitcher, shut them out 2-0. You look at the hitting. I think that's the one thing about OSU squad that if you're an OU fan ought to have you a little bit nervous, is because they can hit. And they proved that in the three-game series up at Stillwater for sure against the Sooners. And, you know, they left some on early in that Big 12 matchup, which really ended up more of a blowout than it probably should have been if OSU could have converted in the first couple innings with bases loaded. Kylie Naomi was awesome in the tournament so far, 8 of 17 with 3 home runs. You know, they've got the firepower to sort of hang, and then maybe the pitching to keep OU down a little bit in the event that that's a matchup. Man, it would be so much fun to see that next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in the three-game series for the national title between those two teams.
Yeah, I expect both teams to win today, and I expect Oklahoma State, regardless of what happens. Well, let me just put it this way. I expect both Bedlam teams to be in the discussion late into the weekend, possibly into Monday. I absolutely do. And this isn't just an Oklahoma State team that could – I mean, they could. I mean, lose to Georgia and then lose their next game, but I don't expect that. I expect them to – because Gajewski has done wonders with that program, and, you know, he recognizes that, you know, we're – in a softball state now, and we refuse to just bow down to the number one team in the country. We're going to rise up to their level. That's a brilliant hire because they got him from Norman. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Being a Norman guy, so he understands that winning culture, and he's brought that to OSU. And I love it. I love that both OU and OSU are top of their game in this, not only the conference, but right here at the top of the list in the country in softball. It's so cool. And again, I think both these schools, OSU included, especially OSU, is going to be deep into the conversation come late Sunday and again going into Monday as for a chance to maybe even get a Bedlam, like you said, a Bedlam final. That'd be epic.
Oh, man.
I mean, that'd be up there.
Mary Wilson Avan is the pitcher for Georgia. Her stats season long, not the greatest. 20-10, 269 ERA, but she's coming off back-to-back complete game shutouts against Florida in the super regional.
Yeah, you talk about peaking.
Peaking maybe at the right time. So I think both Oklahoma and Oklahoma State enjoy a hitting advantage over the teams they're playing today. But you might would put the pitching edge on the other side, especially probably in the OU game with Alexander, Eberle versus Avant. But I'm the same way. I think we're getting Bedlam tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. And I think there's a heck of a good chance we might get it at the end too. I just do. On the other side, you mentioned Alabama. Montana Fouts is their pitcher, fourth in the nation with 314 strikeouts. You know, they can hit, but she's really kind of the catalyst. That's more of the old school approach, I think, with the way Bama is going. More of the pitching, less of the hitting. But the problem for some of these teams that are geared that way is you're still going to have to score. Because I don't see anybody just – either OU or OSU, keeping them down like to 0-1, 2 run. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think you're going to have to beat OU or OSU 5-4, not 2-1.
Sure. Oh, no, yeah, you're not.
And so,
you're not holding the Bedlam.
You know, somebody may have the pitching, but do they have the hitting to go with it? I think that's going to be the interesting kind of conundrum for some of these teams. And then you mentioned UCLA Rachie Garcia is an Olympian. The pitcher, 17-1, .95 ERA. So, you know, that it's going to be a blast. It always is. It's one of the best. You know, we talked about earlier in the week, you know, shame on both of us for never have been there.
And my wife asked me this morning, are you going to the city this weekend?
Right.
No, I didn't plan, because we got T-ball on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
possibly Sunday, if we can get to Sunday. So it's hard to schedule that, and I didn't want to buy tickets and not use them.
Not be able to go, yeah.
So, yeah, but who knows? I might just see what happens over the weekend, and then come Monday, I'll make it a late night for me.
Yeah.
But it'll be worth it.
For sure. It's going to be a great event.
Today's of the four games, which one, I mean, do you think could be the most entertaining? Try to take the bias out of it. I have one in mind, but what do you think?
Probably Florida State, UCLA, or OSU, Georgia.
I say Arizona, Alabama.
Okay, there you go.
Because Arizona's Arizona.
Yeah, that's true.
And Alabama, we know about them. They can hit. Yeah, you know, I think that one potentially has fun written all over it. 6 o'clock tonight.
Florida State went down to LSU. They were able to win the Super Regional in Baton Rouge. I think it'll be interesting to see some of these, you know, especially, you know, say James Madison. I mean, there's zero chance they've ever played in front of as many people as they're about to.
Nope.
You know, how do they handle that?
I'm not sure. Coming out of the Colonial Conference, I'm not sure they had fans at all this season.
Yeah, that's a good point. They may not have seen them until regionals.
The regionals or super yeah. regionals.
They beat Missouri and Columbia to get here.
Yeah, this is the big stage.
It's a cool story. It's a very, very cool story.
This is why you got to play to win. I mean, you got to play them. Got to play the games. You can't just assume the national seeded teams are going to just advance. Yeah, it's a great story. And if you're going to watch today, I'd mute the TV because it's going to be all about the underdog.
Or it'll be setting up later. You'll start hearing that. I'm telling you, I know what you're saying, but they'll also start setting up the greatest team stuff so that they have something to go to in case it's blowouts. I'm just telling you, it's going to start today if it goes Oklahoma's way.
Yeah.
Coach K retiring at the end of the season. John Shire, former player, assistant coach, is going to take over for Krzyzewski. Man, his numbers are out of control. For his career, won 1,097 games currently, has won 1,097 at Duke, 1,170 overall, all-time winningest coach in men's basketball. He became the first men's college basketball coach to reach 1,000 wins. He's won 5 national titles, 12 Final Fours. I mean, the numbers go on and on and on for Mike Krzyzewski. If I would have told you a year ago, let's say January 1 of 2020, I said, Jared, guess what? By the time we get to November of 2022, both North Carolina and Duke have a new coach. What do you say?
I mean, based on their age, I'd say, well, there's a possibility. But, you know, when a legendary coach like Roy Williams and like Coach K stepped down, it's always it sends a ripple effect across the sports world, sure. But that happened at the same time, though. I think that's where I would have said I would have had pause to agree with you on that one. Say, nah, there one will go another 4 or 5 years before the other one retires. But here we are.
I mean, I don't think there's any doubt the pandemic had a big part in this one. You know, it felt like Kay didn't even think they should be playing this year. I don't know if that was just an excuse because his team wasn't any good, or if that was, you know, he really felt that. But to be honest with you, you know, he gets this kind of this rap of being such a, I don't know, likable kind of guy or whatever. He's not. He's not a likable guy at all. Matter of fact, he's
what, he's a jerk? Or?
He always has been to the media. Always almost like he thinks he's so much smarter than everybody else.
Well, like recently when he went after
a college kid reporter. And, you know, and he's always been like that. It's just that it was excused because he was so good. You know who he really was more like than even he wants to admit?
Bobby Knight?
His mentor, Robert Montgomery Knight. Now, did he get physical with the players? No. But he acted the same way to the media. I mean, listen, he was a jerk. It's okay to say it. And I want to know how much – I think pandemic was a big part of it. You know what else I want to know how much of it is a part of this?
What we talked about yesterday?
Zion.
Oh.
How much is that? Mr. Squeaky Clean Duke. Give me a break, Kay. Zion Williamson was getting offered hundreds of thousands of dollars to go play college basketball. I'm not saying he did it, but somebody within that pipeline did. Duke isn't that great a deal where you turn down $250,000 to go play college football or college basketball right. Just because you want to play for Duke. That ain't the way it works, man. So, this holier-than-thou persona that he wants to carry, I've about enough of it. And I think it started to crack.
Yep.
With the yelling at the berating of the college reporter. And now the Zion stuff is going to come out, and it's going to make him look like an idiot and like a hypocrite, and he's getting out before it gets there.
He's jumping ship. He's doing the Pete Carroll. I think another part of it is what we talked about yesterday was
– And he's old.
Old is obviously – yeah. I mean, how long is that hair going to stay black?
Just for men.
Now he doesn't have to. but the recruiting or the transfer portal, I wonder how much he doesn't like that. He doesn't like the new age of recruiting.
Oh, he likes it zero.
Exactly.
So you know what he doesn't like? Being able to sit there at his chair with his long nose at Duke and go, come here.
Right.
If he has to put out any effort, then he doesn't like it. I mean, you can just tell he's so arrogant.
Yeah.
And maybe he has a reason to be. I mean, he's been good. One of the top whatever coaches of all time in college basketball. 3, 5, whatever you want it to be. But it's not going to bother me that Kay's not on the sideline anymore. Right. Move on. Now, what happens to Duke?
That's the million-dollar question. Is do they continue to be Duke outside of last year? Or is there a drop-off, which, is a great possibility with the new coach? You see that a lot. They just can't carry the momentum. But other places have. In other sports, obviously, Lincoln Riley, Coach Day up in Ohio State. But that's a different animal. I don't know. I think the timing is, some would say he's wanting his farewell tour, and he's planning his own parade, but I think the timing is more to name the successor, get him going on the recruiting trail, and continue that. And that I saw it described earlier today, when he starts, Shire starts, it's not so much his judgment of success is not going to be so much on the court, but as it is he continuing to bring in these highly recruited guys, like Coach K was able to do. So I think that's why they started this process early, so he can start the process of recruiting mm-hmm. right now.
Right.
So to answer your question, can they continue to be successful? I think it's going to so start really paying attention to the recruiting rankings and to the recruiting news out there. Are these high-profile guys still considering Duke? Are we going to see a lot of guys go, I'm going to decommit, or I'm going to change up my top five? Because, like it or not, a lot of guys want to go play for Coach K.
Oh, sure.
Not Duke.
100%.
So if he's not there, I'd rather go play for Calipari. Or, the other up-and-comer coaches. Like right here in Oklahoma, at OU and OSU. It opens up doors for other programs, sure. But I think see if they're going to continue to be Duke. That's where it's going to start. Watch the recruiting news and the rankings and see if there's any kind of news coming from that front of these guys. Do they want to? Are they still committed? Mm-hmm. Do they still have interest, or have they changed their mind a little bit?
So in 25 years before he got there in 1980, Duke had only made the NCAA college basketball tournament 7 times. Now, it was tougher back then. I get it. There weren't as many teams. And the truth of it is, in the times that they did make it, of those 7, they made the Final 4, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them. and were the national runners-up twice. So, you know, of the 7 of the 25 that they made the tournament, they were quality teams. You know what I'm saying? But you look since, let's see, he missed the tournament 81, 82, 83. And are we going to say that's it? That's it. So he made it in 80 his first year, missed three in a row, and then from 84 to now, Duke has been in the NCAA basketball tournament every year. 12 Final Fours, five titles. I mean, you can make the argument that Duke is K, not K is Duke.
Where was Duke before Coach K?
That's what I said. They made the tournament seven times in 25 years to him. But when they
wasn't there always that lure of Duke before?
But when they did make it, they made the Final Four four of those times. In 64, 60, 63, 64, 66, and 78, they were runners-up twice in 64 and 78. Honestly, I don't know. Coach K was literally hired at Duke before I was born.
Yeah, that's going to be
by like 8 months.
Trivia question probably on this station and many other stations across the country. Who was the coach before Coach K?
Funny you asked that. His name was Bill Foster.
He looked it up.
I'm looking at it right now. Cheater. On the Duke Wikipedia page.
The great Bill Foster?
The great Bill Foster. But to your point, they won their 1,000th game in 1974, so that's way before K.
Yeah.
They were only eighth school in history to reach that figure at that time. So, yeah, maybe there was more to Duke, but I don't think there's any argument that K took that to a completely different level of national importance. I mean, I think it would be hard to argue that Duke's not the most important national basketball program in college that there is. Damn sure the most recognizable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. When you say Duke, it's not
when you say college basketball, either K or Duke.
Yeah.
Kind of pops in your mind, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's been ever since, I mean, obviously through the run of the 90s.
Yeah, that's where it really got.
I mean, it was, you'd say, you could always say, when you always say, who are the top teams in college basketball? Duke's always going to be in that conversation of number one. Always, if not always be number one. But there's always teams that drop in and drop out.
Sure.
Like Indiana right now. People are like, well, that's not the greatest programs right now. It was. It's a great tradition.
Nobody has any idea how good Indiana was.
Yeah.
But that's
kids,
also
you
been.
You got kids now who have no idea that Indiana was successful.
Yeah. But you know what? For good reason. They haven't made the Final Four since, 2002?
Of course.
Haven't won it since 87.
But Duke has always been up there, more or less. And now you bring up a great question. Was it Duke that was always up there, or was it Coach K? Here's a great question.
Oh, hurry.
Could Coach K have done that anywhere else?
Man, it's your thing. It's hard to say no. Because he did it there. I mean,
he was winning Olympic medals, too.
Yeah, dude is incredible.
Yeah.
He's just schmarmy. Schmarmy a word. This is Paul Feinbaum.
Paul, let's talk about the expectations. We all understand they are Texas-sized. Are they realistic?
They are not. Texas is no big deal other than to Texas fans. This is not a relevant program anymore, Greeny. And go back to 2013 when Texas people fired Mack Brown. He didn't resign. He was shown the door. The same Mack Brown who now has North Carolina in the top 10. Texas can't even win its own state anymore. Lost two of its best players to Alabama. It's pathetically behind Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. It's way, way behind their biggest rival up in Norman, Oklahoma. Texas is fighting for third at best in its own league, and I don't really see a clear path. I think Sark is a very good coach, but let's be honest, Hembo could have coached that offense last year at Alabama.
Oh, my goodness. So let me ask you, Paul, is he the right guy to do it, though? They're waiting for someone to finally get them back where they want to be. Is Sark the right guy to do it?
I think he's as good as anyone else, but the problem isn't Sark. The problem are Texas people. Nick Saban told me one time when he was considering, after he turned down Texas, he didn't want to report to 15 or 20 billionaires every day. That's the way that program rolls. Saban took over at Alabama and said, I'm in charge here. Lincoln Riley has very few people that he has to answer to in Norman. That's the problem for Sark. Every other minute, somebody else is calling up and wanting a piece of him and that program. And until they clear that up, and they haven't yet, that program will be stuck in the mud.
Very pointed comments from one Paul Feinbaum about the state of Texas football. I could not agree any more with him on the last part of that.
On the billionaire part?
The billionaire part, yeah. And too many cooks in the kitchen type of thing down there in Texas. And but I did, you know what I thought, a couple of interesting things. One, did he kind of let the cat out of the bag there when he was talking about Saban telling him about Texas? Because he said, when he turned him down.
Yeah, I want to know when was that.
Which time was that?
Was it before the Herman hire?
Before Charlie Strong, before Herman.
Charlie Strong.
Yeah, which time was that?
Was there a time when Saban, before he came to Alabama, when he was down there at Miami,
yeah, I don't
did Texas say, hey, you know what? What about us?
I don't think so. Because Nick Saban wasn't that.
They were pretty. No, yeah, but they were pretty.
They were rolling, too.
Yeah.
With Mac.
Yeah, they were
it's
rolling.
Either so, after Mac or after Strong. So, one of the
yeah,
two.
Yeah.
But I thought that was interesting because, you know, Saban would never say that. That he either turned him down or was considering. The other part, I mean, you know, I realize who Feinbaum is, which is an SEC honk.
Right, right.
I mean, are we really sitting here saying that Texas is so leaps and far bounds behind A&M?
No, but A&M has
what has A&M done?
They've caught up. I mean, not equally, but
they've
closed the gap.
They haven't just put Texas in the dust.
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't go that far.
I wouldn't either. Caught up, I think, is a really good way to say that.
Caught up or closed the gap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think it's starting to show that. You know, you mentioned the recruiting. I think you're seeing more. And it helped that A&M went to SEC, let's be honest.
It helped who?
That A&M with recruiting.
It damn sure helped Alabama with Texas recruiting.
That too. Yeah.
It opened up the state.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's hurt Texas. But the biggest thing is the billionaire thing.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
The meddling.
The not let, yeah, in just that town.
Oh, well.
Being in that town with all the stuff to do and just the softness of, you know, Texas is pretty soft most all games but one, it seems like, every year.
Yeah.
And maybe a random couple others, but they're a totally different program than what, say, Oklahoma or Alabama is. There's no doubt about that. I mean, not from success. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about from the structure of it. Yeah, a guy like Saban or a guy like Stoops, they could never coach there because of all the other stuff. The truth is, they had about the only guy that could do it, and they ran him off.
And that was Mac.
Yep. You don't think they wouldn't trade Steve Sarkisian for Mac Brown right now?
Absolutely, they would.
They'd never admit it.
Right. Too proud.
But there's no doubt that, well, maybe they wouldn't, but they should. Because he's the only one that can consistently get them to play hard. And also have to put up with all the other BS that goes along with being the coach at Texas.
Yeah, he found a way to juggle that.
He really did.
And to manage that. And the other guys, I mean, I thought Charlie Strong was a good coach. I thought Herman was a good coach. But something about when going to Texas, it breaks him down. Now the question is, can Sark deal with it? And manage it like Mac did. And I don't know.
We'll find out.
Made a good point, though. Almost anybody could have called the offensive plays for Alabama last year. You know, how much was that of Alabama or how much of that was Sark?
Yeah, but, I mean, you'd think that you get things going at Texas, you got it the same way there, too. I mean, it's not like they can't recruit.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see, but I thought Feinbaum went off. Everybody have a great day. Enjoy the softball.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.